Hello, all you listeners. This is the Dual Screens Podcast, the world's number one indie dev interview podcast. That's a mouthful. It's also very accurate. And joining me this week, it's my first interview of the year. There's been like stuff in the can for, I want to say, the last couple of weeks, just remnants of last year, but now we're fresh. I'm freshly coiffed, haircutted, ready to go to interview our first guest officially of 2023. It's Bentley, the CEO and co-founder of Blowfish Studios, developer and publisher of many an indie game, including Gunscape, a game that I describe in my notes as a boomer shooter meets Minecraft. Accurate. Is that accurate, Ben?
Yes, accurate. Thanks, Andy. It's great to be here. And
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show. Yeah, I was watching the trailer for this thing, and first of all, this game is 6 years old, and I had no idea it even existed until I got a press release about the Switch version coming up very soon, February 1st. So that's like around the corner. But I was watching the trailer, and I was like, am I watching like Turok footage on N64, or what is happening in this game? And then there's like this kind of building aspect to it. So I want you, Ben, to give me the elevator pitch of Gunscape. I know I did a nice job with the whole boomer shooter thing, but give me your more profesh sales pitch for
Zegas. I don't know. That's a pretty succinct and accurate description there. Gunscape, like I said, it's old. Like we started development in this back in 2013, and ideation back then, and long time ago. It's like that's 10 years ago now, nearly. And yes, it's a elevator pitch. It's Minecraft meets kind of Quake 2, Turok kind of that's really it. I mean, I guess the people, where we started with it is me and my co-founder, so with Blowfish, like Aaron Grove, we kind of met back in the 90s playing LAN games, and those games that we would LAN, like Quake 2, Quake 3, Marathon. So we were big into like the first-person shooters, and what Gunscape was like, we wanted to, we created a game, like a toolkit, actually, taking some of the best bits of Minecraft, because even back then in 2013, it was a massively successful game, and we wanted to take that and build something that people could easily create their own levels and their own maps and gameplay that focused though on that that Twitch Twitch first person shooter and aspect rather than anything else. And that was the main thing. And then that's how it was born. It's been out for a while. We actually did a Kickstarter back in 2014, and then we released the Steam Early Access in 2015, and then we went consoles in 2016, like the PS4 and the Xbox One. So quite a while ago. And the story of what's coming out now on Switch is that back then we would try and do the port to the Wii U, yes. Nintendo Wii U. And this game, it really suits the Nintendo platforms and the players there. Technically we had a few too many challenges, which meant we couldn't really get it there. And then over the years, we've still it's still the game, it's running, and we've been continually trying to get the porting onto Switch. Lot of different aspects there. Even Gunscape, when it first came out on the PlayStation and the Xbox, one of the big things about it was it has cross-platform essential user-generated content and cross-platform multiplayer. So it's a massive deal, because only recently has PlayStation come to the table by allowing full cross.
Yeah. They were all stingy for quite some time. It depends on who you ask at what point in time in the gaming cycle, but at one point everyone was an asshole about crossplay.
But we've been kind of supporting it. You couldn't play PlayStation versus Xbox back then, but you could play PlayStation with PC, and then, you know, so that was, you know, so it's a for us, you know, it's a really big achievement in that we've been able to, you know, one of the very first games to actually, you know, to support cross-play when it comes to both user-generated content and the actual, you know, real-time gameplay. And that's a big fun.
Was one of the main sticking points of the Wii U port was that the Wii U was just not a good piece of hardware?
Yeah. I mean, not that it was a good piece of
hardware. Listen, it was decent-ish, you know.
Yeah, it had its gimmick. You know,
it did.
Which, you know, if you didn't have that, would you have a Switch? You know, I think a lot of people panned the Wii U for the whole handheld thing. And
I've always felt like the Wii U, it had to fail for the Switch to be born and be as successful as it was. So again, it served the purpose. I mean, I owned a Wii U. I had two Wii Us. You know, I hacked them both.
Oh, two, that's a bit much.
Didn't pay for a single Wii U game. Because there were Glorford emulators for me back in the day, but it had its charm, it's again the gimmickness of it, but it felt like a Fisher Price like version of like the Wii.
I think the dev kits, yeah, similar. let's just say, look, the Switch is a success, and it's amazing piece of hardware. I think people were thinking it was going to fail from the beginning because of the Wii U, but Nintendo, again, you know, proving their prowess when it comes to creating games and game platforms. So.
I think the Switch will only slow down in sales when no one else wants to buy it anymore. I feel like those who want it have it. It's approaching like PS2 numbers in sales. So I think it's going to get to a point where we can't sell it. We have to like make new people so they can buy more Switch. So what's it like? Because you guys have grown a lot as a studio over the last 6 years. And again, nearly 10 since this game was first conceived, kickstarted, funded, released on PC and, you know, Sony and Xbox consoles. What's it like coming back after all this time, looking at this game now and bringing it to the Switch audience and seeing like how you've grown since then, what this little relic of your past looks like, and what's that feeling like for you guys?
I mean, for me, I love it. Like Gunscape, it was a massive achievement for us and a game that we all really loved, and not just from the studio's point of view, from the players when we launched it back then. Yeah, it's been a while, and that's kind of, you know, it's kind of just died away. But for me, when we released the game, we were astounded by the levels and the content that our players were creating in there, and you know, so as a game internally, it's still something that's very close to our hearts there, and still something, you know, we were tossing around, you know, what does is there a sequel, you know, or where do we take it from here? Which is, you know, we're doing a lot more now, so it's going to take a bit of concerted effort and decision to make that happen, but. I'm going to play it, you know, more on the Switch now because it runs, you know, considerably well on the Switch. Mm-hmm. Considering, I think, you know, we kind of, you know, spent a lot of time to get it working and running on there, and so yeah, it just means a lot to actually have it there and release it, because all the content also that, you know, it's launching with a lot of content from players, and one of the big things when we released the game initially is we'd set it up to, like, we were thinking people were going to build essentially, you know, multiplayer like deathmatch or, you know, capture the flag. We implemented, you know, all these kind of functionality into the game, the ones that you would think of when you're thinking more like first person shooters. And that's where we thought people would really spend the time. And people made some great, you know, it's about making new maps, but also making, you know, classic old maps. So, you know, we played a lot of Unreal Tournament. There was like, you know, opposing castles, opposing towers is one of the, you know, classic maps, and people made, you know, multiple versions of those that play, like, they were amazing. We're just always blown away by the maps that people were making, and, you know, how much they played like the original, but, you know, in Gunscape, and just having their twist on it. But one of the big things that surprised us was that we did put in this ability to make single player like campaign maps, and mm-hmm. And there were actually more people were playing the game for the building, for the creation side, and they were making their own campaigns, or they were, although again, they were trying to, reconstruct older games. Like someone gone there and made a whole 7-map campaign from like GoldenEye, right? You know what I mean?
Oh,
It's in,
shut up. That's
yeah. So it's
amazing.
like, yeah, and you're playing, it's like, oh, like this, I know, I can see all these bits and pieces. So that was something that we had to, not had to, but we decided, oh, we kind of like, in our updates back then, it was like, embracing that and giving people the opportunity to link maps, because you couldn't even link maps at the time when we launched it. They were just separate, and it's, oh, well, now we'll let people move from one map into the next map, so they're making kind of campaigns. And so, again, because it was our first game that really let us bond with the player community. People were spending, they're telling us they'll spend like, 7 hours a day, like one chunk, just building maps. And that was like, it was really cool. And again, I think, the kind of game it is, I think, really, it really fits the Switch too, in the way that you can play it. We were able to support, split screen. So in the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox and the PC, you can actually do 9-player split screen. Because again, because it's a low, the graphics is, like low res, kind of
I need
that
to
kind
see what
of
this
very
looks
stylized.
like.
Yeah, so I don't know, we're not supporting like 9-player on the Switch, but to do 4-player. But it's like, it's, if you check it out, you can do 9-player on the other ones, which is, you can't have 9 controls on the Switch, so as well, so it doesn't quite work there. But just having that ability, and like I've got two school age daughters, and they love Minecraft and how they're building. And so I think it's, kids and, people in general love creating their own, bringing their own ideas to life. And so, yeah, it's got, the game itself has a whole kind of like voting system in there. And so we put that in to, essentially, we needed to make a way that, again, players could rate content. So the people that made the really good content would bring that to the surface and highlight that more to people. This is also like showing you what's latest, random picks from things that, genres and different map types. And as a player, as a creator, you get to choose what gameplay types you support in that map. So kind of, we put on these kind of like tools or just, bits and like attributes that really help creators give players the best experience for their map that they've created.
Yeah, it's amazing how you've really brought together very two disparate fan bases. I mean, I have younger nieces who swear up and down they would give their life just to play more Minecraft. They adore it. And then I have nephews who live and die by Call of Duty and the shooter. And you have like this beautiful, again, the Venn diagram. You're just in there and you're bringing both of these worlds together, and it's an amazing thing because you can enjoy two very distinct kinds of gameplay, but you're not sacrificing anything for the other. They both play like you expect them to, and they're quite versatile tools also. Like you can make, like, again, here's all of GoldenEye in the game that I just made, or here's a really competent, like, Quake-like shooter that's fun, and it looks like a retro throwback, and it's, bring all your friends, have a LAN party kind of a vibe, and it works. It's astounding.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and that, thank you. That was, and I guess that's why, why we built it, right? And that's why we
Yeah.
love it. So, no, it's like I said, it's exciting for us to have this release again. One also, also just because like it's something that I told our fan base and our Switch community we will do. And it's been a very tough ride, like to get everything through, get everything, approved and the build without, it just crash a lot again, just because. It's the Switch again is like, more limited on some of the tech, like RAM and things. It's more about memory and speed. So,
Right.
but no,
Well,
it's,
listen, at least you have like a nice pool of free labor to develop your sequel with. Like,
yeah.
listen, look at your top creators. Like, listen, you guys make some great maps for us. Can you just design some stuff for the part two? And we'll put your name in the credits.
The next version will. Yeah, we'll try something different, but it's
Now,
really, really hoping to get some cool new content there from the Switch community.
it must be hard to like look at this again after so much time and think to yourself, can we go back in and make some like dramatic changes to this thing? Because you've learned, again, you've grown and evolved as a studio so much. How do you resist temptation to like, we can like tear this thing apart if we want to and like put a bunch of new shit into there? But again, it exists as it was 6 years ago. How do you avoid that or resist the urge to tinker with what was perfect, 6 years ago?
Well, I mean, one thing that kind of like stops that is that it's a massive job. This is 6 years ago. We weren't,
Work, time, money.
we didn't build it to be the most extendable kind of thing. We were trying, but yeah, it's like it's especially now, like when you start trying to play too much around with how it was built. You can kind of quite easily break something. So I think, yeah, and that's the thing. So to do the next version or whatever it is, it would be a kind of a total rebuild of what was. But learning from everything that we've done before with it. So yeah, it's not that we don't want to. It's just if you try, do something and you just break it, and it's like, all right, no.
I mean, it'll probably be 6 more years from at that
Yeah.
rate.
Hey, we're still around. It's again. Yeah, it's not too long to wait. Switch two, whatever it's called.
Yeah, this is a bit of a tangent, but do you think we'll ever get that like in the near future? Because I feel, again, we touched on Switch sales for a little bit like a hot second ago, but I feel that thing, it's just the way it sells. There's no immediate reason to make a
No.
successor console for the
No,
Switch yet.
no, exactly. I think the one thing that Nintendo's done really well with the Switch, and partly by necessity, but the one thing they've done really well is that they've stuck to their guns and they've said what the Switch is for, what and the type of game it's for. So you don't. It's quite freeing in some ways for game developers. If you're going to focus on the Switch, you're not competing on trying to put the latest and greatest like graphics and try to squeeze more and more into the game, right? It's about game design, it's about aesthetic design, it's about the game itself, which is tremendous. And I think I'm very impressed though with how AAA some of the AAA games get squeezed onto the Switch. But they do get some reviews sometimes that are a bit wasn't well optimized and all that. And I think because they were trying to do it before they knew that, well, they announced that they were going to do it before they actually tried to do it. So, but no, like going back to what your question is, I don't think we'll necessarily see a sequel anytime soon because, great games just keep coming out on the Switch. Like people keep buying it, people keep buying the games. Nintendo themselves, their studios are set up, leverage the hardware to the fullest and just keep creating fun games that their target demographic enjoy. I mean, you even look at the larger game with what Epic did with Fortnite. They kind of accept, they also embrace the fact, oh, we don't need to do the latest and greatest kind of graphics and push that element
I
there.
mean,
It's about the game, right? So
you can play it on your phone.
yeah.
So, you've looked back on this project now, Gunscape. The woes in bringing it like from the Wii U mishaps to now it's back on the, now it's on the Switch. What are some of your fondest memories as you look back, bringing it to now like a more of a current gen console all these years later? Like any fun stories you had while you were making this thing all those years ago that kind of came to your mind? Like what
I
memories
mean,
came flooding back?
no, I mean, was one big one. It's not so much a fun memory, but
Oh,
when we did the early access. So on PC. We actually did a it was kind of free to play at that point back in 2015. We did the kind of launch of the early access on Steam. And we were just a small team. I think about about 16 people, something like that. We built our server, tech up, and had that all going. We got like 100,000 players in the first week or something like that, and it was
Wow.
unfortunately our server, it wasn't quite ready to handle that. So it did, it had this massive influx of people, but it just it just kind of that was a few, on launch, just late nights and just scrambling around to figure out what's going on. Like, it had this kind of memory leak, so it would just fall over, every so often. And what you do, you just put a little hack in that says reboots the server, even though it hasn't
Right.
crashed. Like, reboot it every so often, so it doesn't. Yeah, so it can kind of help itself. So, what happens in game development? We bonded. Our team bonded over those experiences because even more because there's like down the trenches doing that. But yeah, so it wasn't a bad one. I was like, oh, it was really cool. We had so many people come in and play, right? And that was really exciting. I mean, on beyond that, the again, it was the kind of the working with the community and really seeing, the stuff that was coming out. We built our own campaign to launch with a single player and multiplayer maps to kind of help. But it was, we got to speak to our number one fans and the content creators, and that was just super fun. And trying to also pivot and add different content or fix things that they might bring up. So it's 100% a community driven game, and so working with the community back then was, it was just a lot of fun. And we were running tournaments, we were running competitions, and saying, around the maps, and so that was really cool. But yeah, I think that was a really big thing with the Kickstarter. Going rewind back even further,
Oh boy, yeah.
mind you, I'll say the Kickstarter was a failed Kickstarter because it wasn't. So we self-funded the game anyway to ourselves, but the Kickstarter itself failed. That was it was really cool. Again, working with the community, and just having that. It was a lot of work though. It was, I think that was one of the big things to take away from that. But it's something we'd never done before, so always just kind of having that challenge and learning, really just learning a lot of stuff, which is doing first time. And then it was one of our games that we got to show. I think, I don't know, it was a GDC or one of the PAXs. We had the game on the Microsoft Xbox kind of booth or
Oh, wow.
exhibition. So that was really cool. So we got to, talk to, working with Chris Charla at the time, and so seeing all the people at the booth, and yeah, that was really fun. A lot of kind of stories from that, but
Yeah, and like look at you now. Like again, your studio is, like I think you're like one of the I get most of my emails in my inbox on the PR side. The name Blowfish comes up, I think, more often than any other name in my inbox.
yeah,
Because
I guess.
you guys, you because you pull the it's double duty. You develop games, and then you also curate and publish games. Also, and few indie developers like get to that level where they can be like a company that makes games, and also we're gonna look out for talent. And we want them in our catalog, like under in our family, so to speak.
And we started doing that about 5 years ago now, I think. And we did that because, we're very technical focused as well, tech focused. So we had that experience in releasing, and porting and releasing games on the consoles. And so we specialize more as a multi-platform, indie game publisher. So we would, work with teams that have, working on some really cool games. They didn't have the, capability. They wanted to get it onto consoles, and but didn't have the kind of capability there. And so we started off really, helping in that fashion. And then, as further along, we started, fully funding the games as well with for the developers. So yeah, full publishing kind of service there. And so I think, and we find ourselves working with more developers too, which less privileged. They might, they find it harder to to get traction or get launched, and because they might be from different parts of the world where it's harder to either get the hardware or people. And so it's just we've made some really good relationships and in that way with our developers, and it's just kind of been really enjoyable. Obviously, we're all in there trying to make a living and make money. But,
let's be real.
we want to make some profit so we can keep reinvesting back into different games and as a publisher. And
you got to make Gunscape 2 somehow.
Yeah.
Someone's got to fund that game.
But
I recall, I was at a Play NYC, I want to say 2 years ago. And there was a game I came across. There's this one guy, little room by himself, showing off this kind of quirky game, Kung Fu Kickball.
I was like,
this game is so much fun. It looks really cool. We brought him on the show. He was still like this solo indie dev, had no publisher at all. And then, lo and behold, Blowfish comes along, scoops him on up.
It was a long road to solo doing and making a game solo is tough, right? That was really cool. We helped out where we could there also in on the graphic side and on the server back end. And the game didn't go off as much as either of us had hoped, but it was a lot of again we had some challenges there along the way with the multiplayer because it is like a bit of a Twitch kind of it's a really cool game.
That's why I was like, you got to come and talk about this game, dude. But I think it speaks more to your ability to look at a game and know that it's a quality game, because you know what it's like to be on the other end of things. You know what it's like to be a struggling indie dev where money's always tight and it's got to get released at some point. Otherwise, I'm going to inflate the budget if I don't get it out the door. So you understand how that world works and you can bring that to the table as a publisher. Hey, we know what you're going through.
Yeah.
Let us be your Sherpa and help you, birth this thing into the world.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and over the years, we've developed and released lots of games and we always know, it's that last 10% generally in a game development that is really tough. Mm. And having any kind of support to get across it. And look, it's not always easy, right? Sometimes we are a publisher, we are helping with doing the porting and stuff, but we still can't finish the game for the developers. So
right, at some point it's hey, we're making our own stuff, so just finish your thing. Here's your little money bag. Do what you have to do. But you guys always have a good presence at PAX East. I've been going to PAX East for, I want to say, God, it's a long time. It's more than, ever since PAX East exists, that I've been going to PAX East. But I love going to your booth. Always great games over there. So, and I can't wait for this year, too. You're going to be there, right? Of course you're going to be there.
Yes. Yeah, I think everything's coming back now, which is good, right? I think it's been a pretty tough last 3 years, I think, for everybody.
Harder for guys like you too, because again, that's it's the place to get buzz and to get noticed too by big time publishers who want to see what's on the indie scene and what's going on. But removing that from the equation was a problem for a lot of indie devs. Before we move into our fun rapid fire segment, I want to ask you, if someone's playing Gunscape the first time, play it, they've had their way with it for a couple hours and they put it down, what should they walk away with when they put down Gunscape? What feeling should they feel? in this in the chestal region. What's the main takeaway?
I mean,
of guns game.
Yeah, you know, I'd hope. I mean, the game is about, you know, build, play, share. So, I mean, most people are going to play the game for the sense of achievement and the satisfaction from building their own level, and then being able to go in there and play it like, you know, it's a fully fleshed out game, essentially. And that's what drives people and gives them the motivation to keep creating and building levels. So even within a couple of hours, somebody can definitely just, you know, go in there, use some of the contents and the blocks, you know, from games that they know and love from the past, and then basically build up just a little, you know, a little personal experience, right?
Right.
Whether it's, you know, multiplayer, if you play split screen or online, or single player campaign, because you can put your own story into it. So, and Blowfish as a company has always been about story and narrative in games, and so you put down little terminals and you can kind of lay out your whole kind of like, you know, Half-Life style or something like a game where you put in the story. So really, we just, you know, the hope is the player goes in there and is able to build something that means something to them, and then be able to share that and play that with other people within the first couple of hours, and then really just, yeah, keep doing that. So,
and it's so cheesy, but it's so good though. Damn it, you're so wholesome. I hate it. All right, Ben. Let's learn more about you.
I'm worried about this part.
as a human being. No, it's not gonna get too crazy. I mean, I do ask a lot of weird shit, but that's fine. It's time for rapid fire, listeners. Here we go. Ben, the phone rings. It's late. It's 2 a.m. One of your daughters picks up the phone. The police, and they say daddy's been arrested, he's in jail. What did daddy do? why are you in jail, Ben? What crime are you most likely to commit?
Probably I was out driving. I occasionally do late night drives, so I was probably out driving and maybe I got a bit too excited and drove a little bit too fast.
A little speed demon.
I like to keep it on track days, but yeah, that's probably probably the most real thing that could happen.
Right. That's not too terrible. We've had some dark answers for that one, so it's not so bad. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at keeping secrets?
9. No one likes to give themselves a 10.
Oh, nine. Wow.
Yeah.
Right, I'm just going to scratch the follow-up out. I can't ask you about your next unannounced project. Would you rather have no one laugh at your jokes or you unable to laugh at anyone else's joke?
It's probably, I'd say the truth probably is that people don't laugh at my jokes. And I laugh a lot at other people's jokes. So,
I mean, you know, that was pretty good, though. That was really good.
There you go. So I can live with that. No one laughs at my jokes. Mm-hmm. I like laughing, so it'd be I wouldn't be able to not laugh that way.
We live the same miserable existence. No one laughs at my jokes at work. I'm a riot. Because I think that my life is a sitcom. So when I'm at work, I say things that I think if there was an audience watching, they would enjoy it. Because it's always at my coworkers' expense. And I think that's what it's just jabs. It's more jabs than jokes. I mean, that's what the problem is.
I mean, for me, I just do dad jokes. And so no one, my wife, my
come on. It's like, again,
it's like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed age before the show, and, you know, I think I'm evolving. I have no kids yet, but I have the mentality of like a dad, and the dad jokes are always like top of mind. Which do you think you would win, a rap battle or a dance battle?
Jeez, neither. I'm a terrible dancer.
Listen, you're faced with the challenge. If someone says, Ben,
all right, rap. Sure,
you've been, rap. You know, the white glove slap, challenge you to a duel. All right, rap. I'm not going to ask you to rap, though. Don't worry.
Yeah. I'm just saying that because I know I've tried dancing and I just can't do it.
Ben, if you are what you eat, what are you?
Everything. I eat everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like trying lots of different food.
Mm-hmm.
I like meat, so probably yes. A piece of meat. I don't know, mm-hmm. But I like fish. I don't like dessert so much. So yeah, it'd be like some kind of.
You're just like some amorphous glob of a bunch of foods.
Yeah. Exactly. Sorry, that answer's kind of boring, but
no. Listen. You know, I think if someone was like, I'd be pizza, it's like, that's all you fucking eat is pizza? There's other foods, you know? It's like,
I mean, chicken's probably my favorite. I love meat, but like steak, but chicken, so I might be a chicken.
Are you now, okay, we're now going on a little tangent here. We're going off the road into the woods.
Uh-oh.
Your favorite fried chicken sandwich, fast food fried chicken sandwich, do you have one? And if you do, which is it?
No, so I'm not American, so I like just my fried chicken by itself, not in a sandwich.
I think I'm the amorphous blob of food in this conversation. I'm comprised of a bunch of fried chicken sandwiches. I've sampled them all. Burger King, Popeyes, Chick-fil-A.
I like my fried chicken.
Made at home and not in a fast food chain restaurant?
No. Love fast food, just not without bread.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I love fried chicken, but yeah.
Just not in sandwich form.
Yeah, not in sandwich form.
Okay. I mean, I think you're missing out. Some slaw, some mayo, some pickles. A nice brioche.
You know, I eat a lot of chicken schnitzel sandwiches.
Yeah.
No branded stuff. So
there's a place that makes good chicken schnitzel by me.
Oh, you where? Tell me, like, what would you suggest that I try then next time I'm in?
Oh, like if I told you to get like an actual fried chicken sandwich, like where should you go get one?
Yes.
I give the Popeyes chicken sandwich a try.
Right.
It's a good starter chicken sandwich. It's decent. It has a good little special sauce on it.
Mm.
Nice pickle. Good crunch. Great chicken.
All right, I'll judge you on this. I'll go and I'll try.
This is not sponsored by Popeyes, but if you want it to be, you can make it happen, Popeyes. All right. So would you rather always have wet socks or wet hair?
Wet hair. Mm. Wet socks is terrible. It's horrible.
Now, this is not going to be a very rapid fiery question, but we can always skip it to the end, because I feel like there's going to be like a whole story of why you came to the answer, unless you were like, the answer comes like immediately. Like my love for chicken sandwiches. We've been seeing a lot lately, this big AAA publishers sort of handing off their IP to indie devs. Like, I want to say, looking back, we've had Cadence of Hyrule, indie dev got Zelda. Mm. We recently got Castlevania is like a Dead Cells crossover now. Silent Hill is like all indie devs are all up inside that thing, between Bluebird doing the remake, an indie team doing a brand new installment. We have Annapurna public, you know, working with No Code to do another indie Silent Hill game. If you were in that spot, if someone said, Ben, we want Blowfish to work on this beloved, cherished, sort of forgotten, maybe-ish IP.
Mm.
Do you know which IP that would be?
No.
Again, so, you can always revisit in the end if you want to give it some, you know, time in the old noggin to consider. And I know it's a deep question. Because to me, like a man that's played a lot of good games over the course of his lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to ruin them by me trying to make it the memories. So, I mean, we're working
unless you already. Oh shit!
Yeah, so we are already working on an unannounced game. Like it's you just got to wait a few months before the announcement comes out, I think. So, yeah, so there's one
my
that...
God, are you already doing the thing that I asked you that you would maybe want to do?
yes, in a way, I guess.
Holy shit! All right, good. All right. I'm really glad I asked that question.
I'm good at keeping secrets, so
that's the thing. Yeah, you know, but you kind of, you know, still, you didn't give the whole farm away, but you gave me enough. I know that something is happening.
I would say it's not my absolute. Your question was, what would I really want? It's not that. It's still like, really cool, but it's not. Yeah, right. So, maybe let me think about it, because that one's tough.
I'm trying to think, what's a really shitty game franchise? Like we got the rights to Bubsy. Like, I don't know, what would you possibly say?
No.
Would you rather live? I may press you after the show in an unofficial offline, you know, off the record manner. I'm just saying, prepare yourself. Would you rather live next to an active volcano or a very poorly secured prison?
Sorry? Would I rather live next to...
Next to an active volcano. So there's a chance of, you know, hot lava just surging through your home at some point. Or live next to a very poorly secured prison. So no one cares.
Oh, man.
The inmates have the keys.
I think it'd have to be a... Oh, that's a terrible question. Volcano? Volcano?
I mean, how often do they erupt? I mean, it's active,
exactly.
Sure, but like...
I know. That's my thinking, yeah. It's like...
You'll take your chances.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. If they're there,
at least you'll hear the lava coming towards you. It's like, all right, I'll move. But there's like, you know, some mass murderers coming your way in the dead of night. Literally.
I'm thinking my family.
Would you rather have all gold teeth or be missing half of your teeth, of your real teeth? And it's like a legit half, like to the top half or bottom half, not half, sporadic.
I mean, I'd go for the missing half and then just get fake teeth put in. You didn't say you can't do that, so...
I mean, I would say that, but I think that's the beauty, because like you found the solution at the end. It's like, yeah, I'll do that, but I'll fix it somehow.
Yeah. Also, gold teeth, they're not very strong. I don't think you'd be able to eat much with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Take my cheat answer. Thank you.
What can I ask you that you can't cheat on? Oh, this one. Would you rather, for the rest of your life, watch any piece of media, be it in the movie theater or at home, at double the speed or half the speed?
Double the speed.
Double the speed. Yeah, I think that's a fun answer.
Yeah.
It's either chipmunks or alcoholics. It's the only way.
Yeah. I think mainly because I feel like I don't have much time anyway, so double the speed at least suits my lifestyle.
Right.
Half the speed would be like, oh, I'll probably never finish
it. You won't even notice it. It's like, oh, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think, like, again, for most indie developers, like, some hardly have time to even watch TV. So you'd be like, yeah, I'll watch the new Marvel thing at... It's like an hour long, right? It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to end on yet another like deep sort of like pointed gaming career question, like the what IP you're working on now that you're going to tell me about after the show's over. If you could erase the memory of a game that you've played before and experience it again for the first time and relive all that excitement and wonder when you first played it, which game would that be?
They're all the games that... There's two games that come to my mind. or a few games.
We could take two.
Play them. My fear is that, you know, I'd have to erase all my gameplay experience because, there's the older ones are like, I don't know how I'd feel about them now. But
yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the games I love were, you know, I
was
how
about
big,
this?
But I was a big. Oh yeah. What?
We'll guarantee that even if you played this game when you were like 12, you know, older you would feel the same sense of awe and joy when you play it now. So let's not worry about what older you would like, you know, like for me, the first Silent Hill is a great game, or Metal Gear Solid. But I wouldn't be like, what is this stupid shitty game now when I'm 40? Yeah. So again, that's not part of the equation. It's just whatever game it may be, you'll feel the same way-ish. What game do you think that would be? Or games?
I mean, I've got a soft point for EverQuest. I was a big text-based mudder when EverQuest came along, and just first time experiencing that full kind of immersive 3D, massively multiplayer RPG. Mm. It was amazing. You know, the first time you walked into, you go into the big forests and the kind of the elven forests or the elven towns, and it was just so atmospheric for the time, even though it was like, you look back at it now, it's like terrible graphics, but, you know, just the sense of exploration and being there with friends and stuff.
Yeah.
So for me, that was, spent many, many, many hours in there. But I just remember early on, first started playing that game, it was amazing. So it's probably the
That's a good
strongest
answer.
One.
That's a good answer. All right, Ben. Thank you so much, dude, for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun talking about you, talking about Gunscape, talking about a bunch of other stuff. So where can, this is like the you social media pitch marketing guy PR moment, where can folks find out more about you, about Blowfish, and about Gunscape? Give us like the spiel, as it were. All of the at and hashtag things that you
and
have.
And the hashtag, yeah. I mean,
that come to mind.
Go to our website, blowfishstudios.com. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter, Blowfish Studios, or I've got my own Twitter account. I'm not, this is probably my weakest part of this podcast and me talking about where to do
it's it. Okay. We'll put links in like the down below area because, you know, you'd be surprised how many folks forget their own shit when they come on this show. You'd be like, I don't know, Google it. Google the name of the game we're talking about, then you'll find this, maybe.
I remember my own domains at least. our website and Twitter and YouTube, Blowfish Studios Games. Put read the links below.
Yeah, go buy it if you can find it.
We're running some, keep an eye out. I think we're running a couple of competitions for the Gunscape launch. So giving away a Switch or two, I think, with like some Gunscape skins, console skins and stuff. So keep an eye out for that. I don't know when that's launched or it already has. So,
all right.
Yeah.
We'll like retweet all that fun stuff too. So that's Gunscape, February 1st, finally on Nintendo consoles. It feels almost criminal that a game that I feel evokes so much Nintendo feelings, like N64 especially, how it's just now landing on a Nintendo console.
Yeah, so blame me.
Listen, you saved the best.
Resourcing.
You did it. Everything's eventual, yes. Ben. It had to happen at some point. You didn't give up on your dreams.
No.
Your dreams did not become memes. You did it.
I'm very, very satisfied. And I have to say a big, big thank you to my team that's been working hard on it, on and off, trying to, things take priority and things like that, but they've, really stuck through getting all the technical aspects and everything. So, it's going to be huge if people get out there and make it huge.
I'm going to crash all those servers again. All right.
Yep, let's do it. Let's do it.
And with that, thank you, Ben. Thank you so much. This has been a real treat. Thank you, listeners. And please go out there and buy Gunscape on February 1st and it lands on Switch, or buy it now on Steam or other console things you may or may not own. Join us next week where I'll have Ben back on and I'll be trying to buy his Transformers collection from him in the background. I'll take the whole lot for a solid grand.
No. Thanks, Andy.
All right, guy. Thank you so much, buddy. It was a real treat. Guys, thank you so much. And until next time, please be excellent to each other.